Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation about education with the Secretary of Education. Miguel Cardona visited Hollywood this week to go to Fairfax High and helped to launch a new program with CAA, the Creative Artists Agency, called GetReadySet.org. The idea is to get people interested in mentorship programs. I had a chance to meet with a lot of kids there and get them involved in basketball and football and dancing and other things. It was a really fun day. And we sat down for an extended conversation about the future of education, mask use, vaccinations, mental health, learning loss, critical race theory, so many different topics. He was very generous with his time, and we appreciate that. So here is our conversation with the Secretary.
Mr. Secretary, welcome to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And good to have you in California.
Glad to be here, really am.
I mean, today's event is all about mentorships and an opportunity for students to interact with a lot of people. I mean, it's got to feel good to be out actually seeing students in person.
I told them, I said, you know, the recovery that we are looking for is visible here. You know, when you see students engaging, when you see students laughing with one another, this is what the recovery looks like. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, and speaking of that, paint a picture for us, if you will, of what does fall in school look like here in California and all across the country?
Fall, there are some things that are going to look similar to what it was like before the pandemic, right? So I expect all students to be in school every day, all day. They deserve that. They've been waiting. We know it can be done safely. So that's the part that's going to look familiar. But I'm hoping we do better. I'm hoping that we don't go back to what it was March 2020, that we give our students more opportunities. We learned a lot during the pandemic about not only the resilience of students, but that they can learn different ways. So I'd hope to see technology being used differently. I hope to see better parent engagement. I hope to see our students having after-school programs. You know, the funds are there, right? The American Rescue Plan provided unprecedented funds. The president understood the importance of supporting our schools, mm-hmm. our educators, and most importantly, our students. So I want to see innovative programming, creative thinking, and it's my job as Secretary of Education to lift those best practices and share them across the country.
When you say technology used differently, what specifically do you mean?
Well, listen, I can't wait to be able to announce that the digital divide is in our rearview mirror. We've been dealing with the digital divide. Unfortunately, we saw how it exacerbated gaps for students during the pandemic. There were some communities that didn't have access to it. So for me, it's making sure that we have not only broadband access, but also quality devices and quality content too. We don't often say that. Quality content on the other side of that screen to make sure that our students are getting the best education possible.
And of course, broadband funding, part of the infrastructure bill that's now going through Congress as well. One of the big questions here in California is whether or not students are going to be wearing masks. The CDC says teachers and students have been vaccinated, they don't have to wear masks. State of California says, yes, they do. What do you think about that? And what do you say to parents that are kind of frustrated and don't understand why the state is not following the CDC guidance?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, I'll be very frank with you. It's a lot easier to close schools than it is to open schools. I was serving as Commissioner of Education in Connecticut when we were planning for reopening, and one of the constants was change. We knew that as we heard new guidance or we saw what was happening on the ground, really, we had to adjust. And you know, I have complete confidence in the educators and the leaders of the local districts to make the best decisions. Context matters, right? What's happening in one community may not be happening in another community. So it's really important that they're able to put in those mitigation strategies that not only help reduce the spread, but build confidence in mm-hmm. returning to school. That's critically important too. And that's something that I noticed in my tour across the country. We need to make sure that we're helping our parents feel confident in the return to school for their children.
But do you understand some of the frustration, especially in a place like California yeah. with 58 different counties, very different scenarios in different places, and yet everybody has to wear a mask, and some would say maybe that's not needed in every community.
Right. Yeah, I understand the concern. I understand that we're ready. We have fatigue. We have COVID fatigue. We're ready to get going. I get that. But as a father, I also want to make sure that my children are safe. And if in the communities that are asking parents and students to wear masks and educators, they're doing it because they're partnering with their health department and their health experts to make sure that the schools are safe for all. And to me, this is a health pandemic. We have to lead with health and safety.
Well, let's talk more about the health aspect of that. A big part of that is vaccinations.
Yes.
We know kids 12 and above right now are allowed to get vaccines. Kids 12 and below so far not
right.
allowed to get vaccines. When that vaccine is approved by the FDA for permanent use,
right.
Do you think vaccines should be mandated in schools?
You know, I'll tell you, in my home, as soon as we were able to get vaccinated, we were. I breathed a little bit easier as a father when my youngest got her vaccine, and I knew we can resume normal activity and be without a mask. So I'll leave the decision on whether to require it to the health experts, because they know whether or not it's something that should be required. But I'll tell you, we've seen across the country, when you're vaccinated, it's a safer community, there's less spread, there's less illness. Get vaccinated. It works. I've been vaccinated since January, and I'm happy I did it. And I really encourage all who have access to vaccine and can do it to get it done as quickly as possible.
Because we know there are mandates to get other vaccines before you go into public school. So it would not be an unprecedented
thing. It wouldn't be. And, you know, we've worked really closely with CDC and the Health and Human Services at the federal level. And it's really important that we continue to do that. That's one of the things, too, that post-pandemic, we want to make sure that our interagency work continues. But I rely on them for the science and for the health guidance. And our job is to quickly translate it into what it means for our schools. We've been working well together on that. And I, too, feel that vaccination is probably the best strategy. But we also know that schools were open before the vaccines were available. So we want to make sure all students go to school full-time in person in the fall.
So it sounds like, at least imminently, there's not going to be some sort of federal vaccine mandate.
There's not. Yeah. There's not. And again, what we're doing now is trying to get shots in the arms. I visited many schools where they were offering vaccinations in their gymnasiums because the families felt comfortable in that school. I was at Howard University, and they were doing clinics in their space because people know Howard University. So all hands on deck to get the vaccine and to get it in those communities that have historically been underserved or maybe feel a little hesitancy or distrust. We need to get to those folks too.
Let's talk sort of big picture though about learning loss, right? Last year, really hard for a lot of people, especially communities of color, especially areas with poverty that didn't have a lot of access to technology. What do we do about that? Yeah. How do we deal with that in the coming year and years?
Right. The pandemic exacerbated gaps across the country, but those gaps existed before. So what I hope it does is maintain the level of urgency that we have now to utilize the funds in the American Rescue Plan for programs like we saw today, you know, the summer learning initiatives, and giving students an opportunity to re-engage, giving students social and emotional support and programs that help them build their interpersonal skills. They've been in front of a computer for about a year. Mm-hmm. Programs that give students access to mental health support. But let's not forget our teachers. Our teachers are now having to have new tools to support the students that have been in trauma or have had a much loss in their exposure to academics. So we have to accelerate. We have to make class sizes smaller. You know, the funds are there. I want to make sure that we match it with the urgency and the innovation to give our students the best experience that they had in school since, before the pandemic and since they started schools.
So what does that actually look like, mm-hmm. like tangibly
sure.
for students?
Smaller
or for
class
parents?
Sizes, yeah. More school counselors, better outreach to families, especially those families that we haven't done well in schools reaching out to or getting them to partner with us. So parent engagement needs to be better. Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about Build Back Better, we want to see better parent engagement. We want to see class sizes that are better. We want to see students getting the intervention and support that they need. Wraparound programs, after school programs, weekend programs. We want to make sure students don't go hungry. We want to make sure students have access to social workers, school psychologists. Programs like what we saw this week here where students are with mentors doing sports and just engaging in a positive way. Those are some of the things that I've seen and that I want to continue to see, not to mention the support for our higher education students as well.
And you touched on this a little bit about counseling, but the mental health aspect, we've seen so much depression from so many kids as well. How do you deal with that?
You know, one of my biggest concerns would be for us to address symptoms of trauma by thinking that the student doesn't want to be there. We have to look for signs. We have to train our educators, from the bus driver to the school cafeteria employee that services and supports our students. We have to make sure we're building capacity and giving our teachers and educators the tools to support our students. As you said, many of our students are coming back after a year and a half of trauma. They might have lost loved ones. Mm-hmm. They might have seen a parent lose a job. they might have lost their home. So we have to be prepared to welcome them in a nurturing environment that's not only thinking about the loss that they might have had academically, but the social and emotional well-being that they're going to need support to. So we have to organize and plan that way this summer and into the fall.
And speaking of building back better, when you think about the curriculum itself, are there any thoughts about maybe updating the curriculum, adding more economic training, adding more technology training, adding other things that are sort of more modern to where we are and things that other countries are doing?
Really exciting. In the American Families Plan, there are funds there to enhance and really just develop better our career and technical education. We have to do more to evolve our middle and high schools to meet the demands not only of our four-year institutions, but also our two-year colleges and our workforce needs. I'm excited about the family plan that it gives us an opportunity to think about two-year community colleges and how we can make the connection between our high schools and community colleges better. So yes, there are plans to make sure that our learning is getting our students prepared not only for four-year schools, but for the two-year experience, credentials, and the workforce needs that exist today.
And what do you think, because there's so much controversy about this critical race theory and how that should be taught in school and other things like that. Is there a role for the federal government in that? What is your take on
that? Now, you know, the federal government doesn't have a role in curriculum development. But as an educator for over 20 years, I have complete confidence in my teachers, my principals, and my district leaders to know how to balance that, to teach our students the beauty of diversity and how this country can celebrate it and become one under that celebration and learning. But I also think we need to leave it to our educators to make the decisions. It shouldn't be politicized.
We are talking to Secretary Miguel Cardona, the Secretary of Education. Let's talk for a moment about you, because I think there's a lot of people in California that are just getting to know you. Your background is in the classroom in Connecticut. You were an elementary school teacher, a principal at age 27, right? A superintendent, helped run Connecticut schools, now the Secretary of Education. Talk to us a little bit about your backstory and how your experience in the classroom informs the way
always a teacher at heart, Eric. Always a teacher at heart, fourth grade teacher. Now just the scope of influence that I have is greater, but at the end of the day, I'm still a teacher. You know, being able to work with students and families and work together and build community in a classroom. That's what schools are. You know, a lot of times we talk about what students haven't gotten. What they need most when they come back is that sense of community that you can't really get through a computer. So I'm excited about that. So the decisions that I make, the engagement that I foster from different stakeholders, even folks that don't agree with me, is critically important to make sure that we get it right and that we have diverse perspectives when we make decisions about what's best for our students.
Not only a teacher first, but also a parent first, too. Yeah. How has watching your kids go through this last year changed your perspective coming into this job as well?
It just reinforced for me the importance of the social and emotional well-being of students. This experience as a father just reinforced how our schools are important communities where students want to be. They want to be a part of something bigger than them. So I'm excited to see that this year students are going to be able to come back in person every day. They deserve that opportunity. So as a father, for me, it's critically important that schools continue to think about not only the academic well-being of children, but the social and emotional well-being.
When you look big picture at the U.S. education system right now, what do you think is the thing that we're doing the best, and what do you think is the thing that we need the most improvement on?
You know, this transformational agenda that the president has, Build Back Better, it really is raising the bar. If you think about it, we're talking a lot about those technical strategies, but think about the messaging here. We're going to raise it up a notch. 12 years of free public education is not enough. We're going to raise it. You know, we're going to give 14 years. We're going to give community college. We're going to give 3- and 4-year-olds an opportunity to learn. That's raising the bar. You know, the countries that catch up to us, you know, we have to go to that next level. And it's really important that we recognize that this president has that sense of urgency. So what that means at the ground level, better access to college, not only for our students that are graduating high school, but for our adults that are thinking about new skill development. Let them have access to community college in a way that's affordable. The Pell Grants allow that. So, you know, it's really giving an opportunity for all Americans to really invest in themselves and continue to follow their dreams. You know, I always say we have an opportunity here to hit the reset button in education. But I think folks are coming back from this pandemic thinking, what do I want to do for me? And I think giving folks access to community college and just reimagining themselves is an opportunity for our country to grow.
You know, your school system in Connecticut opened a lot sooner than the school system, most of the school systems did here in California, which you get a lot of credit for. But there's been a lot of frustration from a lot of parents here that were really uncomfortable with the teachers' union and their role in the process of not opening sooner. And there's been some loss of trust between some parents and teachers in the process. How do we repair that? And what is your message to parents that are frustrated and felt like they weren't heard in the last year?
You know, the pandemic did bring out challenges in many different ways, and leading a state where we didn't always have agreement on what strategy to use moving forward. What I found and what's been reinforced in my visits to over 12 states in the last 3 months is that when we have intentional collaboration and keep students at the center, good things are possible. Mm-hmm. So my encouragement is to double down on that, be open, transparent, ensure that families are aware of why decisions are being made. And as long as we keep the students at the center of the conversation, make sure we're following science and make sure we're listening to one another, even perspectives that are different than ours, the students are always going to win. And that's my message across the country. Be intentional about the collaboration, keep students at the center, and they'll always win.
I just wanted to take another moment to talk about you and your background as a Puerto Rican American as well. You know, here in California, we're 60% Latino. You see a lot of brown faces out at this event today, and it's got to mean something for them in terms of representation to see somebody like you speaking not only English but also Spanish at an event like this. Do you talk about how do you feel that weight of that in terms of the representation, and what is your message to students on that front?
Bueno, me siento orgulloso ser Latino y ser secretario de Educación. Definitely. You know, me being here in this chair is the culmination of sacrifice by my parents, who I had more opportunities than them, and my grandparents, who left Puerto Rico for a better life because they needed to work. And they sacrificed a paradise island to come here to live in the project so that their children had better opportunities. Here, two generations later, I'm serving as Secretary of Education. Yes, it means a lot to me. And yes, it means a lot when I see students who look at me and say, wow, you speak Spanish. And it's not only the language, it's really being bicultural. You know, this country was, you know, built on that. And for me, it's just an opportunity to serve proudly. I'm proud to be an American, I'm proud to be a Latino, and proud to represent so many of our students here who are looking for opportunities themselves. They can do it.
Yeah, I mean, the Los Angeles Unified School District, 91% non-white. So it's a pretty remarkable thing for them to see somebody like you here. Lastly, we do something on our show called Personal Issues. This is a 30-second lightning round, more cultural stuff to get to know you so we can have a little bit of fun. All right?
All right.
So these are some of your favorites. Let's see how you do. What is your favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show, anything sports related. Anything, I'm a San Francisco 49er fan. I'll say loudly because I'm on the West Coast. I'm a huge Niner fan, so anything 49ers related.
Okay, favorite movie of all
favorite
time?
Favorite movie, Shawshank Redemption.
Very good. Favorite book of all time?
I'm going to say the Bible. Most influential to me.
That's a good one. Yeah. favorite musical artist?
Mark Anthony, all day.
Oh, very nice. That's fun. Who is your role model?
Geez. You know, I'm going to say collectively, the students across the country who've shown resilience, I really am inspired. And these aren't just words. When I see students, I saw Max out there who's just excited to be here. When I see students in their element, it reminds me of what I do, and that inspires me. So I've had family members who've served as role models. I'm not sticking to your script of being quick in 30 seconds. The students of America, family members, and of course my grandparents who gave up a lot for me.
And a follow-up to that, how does a Puerto Rican kid from Connecticut end up as a San Francisco Giant fan?
San Francisco 49ers.
I'll tell you, San Francisco Giants, sorry.
There was a Super Bowl against the Bengals. John Taylor crossed in the middle. He caught a pass from Joe Montana, and that was Jerry Rice, and then John Taylor scored. I was hooked since. Big Jerry Rice fan. I have 4 ACL surgeries to prove it. Love the 49ers.
Yeah, I'm sure the Giants and Jets are disappointed they didn't get your business all these years. Secretary Cardona, thank you so much. It is great to have you in California. Thank you for taking time with us.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Our thanks to Secretary Cardona for being so generous with his time. We had another lengthy conversation this week with Larry Elder, the Republican radio host who is now running for governor of California. Hear that on another edition of the Issue Is podcast, just released as well. We'll see you next week for the Issue Is podcast. We'll be talking with Kevin Kiley, another Republican running for governor. He is, of course, an assemblyman from the Sacramento area. In the meantime, hope you'll share our show, like, subscribe, and send me a message in social media. Love hearing your feedback. Thanks so much for listening to The Issue Is.